Good afternoon, and welcome to Reminiscing, a program of nostalgia and recollections of the good old days, times that we remember as happy and maybe a little simpler. We know we can't go back, but we can certainly reminisce. This is your volunteer reader, Mary Ellen Stepanek, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, your 24-hour reading station. Good afternoon. Here's more reading from the March-April issue of the Good Old Days magazine. This story is entitled The Misadventures of Our Dodge Dart. Mishaps, pranks, and minor accidents meant a storied life for the family car. This was written and sent in by Mark Steffen. In 1964, when living in Richmond Heights, Ohio, our family had a new Dodge Dart four-door sedan. It had a push-button automatic transmission and an interesting feature that only a teenage boy would discover. The windshield washer nozzles were small metal tubes that could be adjusted upward or downward to control the direction of washer fluid. My approach to this unique feature was a bit more creative than the designers probably intended. One evening, while driving my younger brother to the store, I decided to try my theory with the washer nozzles. Getting out, I adjusted the tubes to the extreme upper position and then pushed the wash button, which does not activate the wipers. Success! Two streams of water shot across the top of the car and landed well beyond the trunk. I thought this would be a great trick to play at night on a car behind us, since they'd have no idea where the water was coming from. That evening, we drove down the street toward our local McDonald's in South Euclid, Ohio. A car came up behind us, and I hit the wash button and saw the driver turn on his wipers. My brother and I found this very funny. Enjoying the humor of it all, we turned into McDonald's. Looping around, we weren't aware that we had been followed by the car that got soaked. The driver had roared into the McDonald's lot, parked his car, and ran across to confront us. Needless to say, he was irritated, and I believe he was ready to pull me out of the driver's side window. Panicked, I hit the gas and quickly drove out and down the road. The driver ran back to his car, which was a Corvette convertible, and quickly caught up to us. With him on our tail, I waited until the last second and made a sharp right turn into a neighborhood side street. He was unable to turn quickly enough, and we were able to lose him by pulling into a driveway and turning out our lights. Thus ended our short-lived adventure. I never tried the washer nozzle trick again. In December 1966, our dad got a new job, and our family had to move to Southampton, Pennsylvania. At the last meeting of my church youth group in Ohio, the gang ran out to the parking lot and wrote, "Good luck, Mark. We will miss you," all over the hood and trunk of the Dart with chalk. Little did anyone know that this ended up scratching the finish so badly that it could not be buffed out. To my parents, this was strike one for the Dart. A few months after moving to Pennsylvania, I drove the Dart to a strip mall auto parts store. I parked straight in at the curb in front of the store. I noticed that the pickup truck next to me had his wheels turned completely to the left. I contemplated waiting for the driver to come out and reminding him to straighten his wheels before backing out. But then I thought that would be too strange coming from a teenager to an adult. Once inside, I happened to look out the front window of the store. I saw the driver get into his truck, and to my horror, he backed out of his spot without straightening the wheels. His front ends swung to the right and proceeded to scrape and push in both left-hand doors of the Dart. I ran out of the store, and the driver apologized and gave me his information. I used the store's phone and called my folks, saying, "The Dart was in an accident while I was in the store." After I explained what had happened, this became strike two. That summer, the Dart was parked in our garage. Our house had a short slope driveway. My brother, who was 12 at the time, wanted to roller skate on the smooth garage floor. He rolled down the driver's side window and lifted the park lever of the push button drive. He started to push the car backward out of the garage with the understanding that he could stop the car by reaching in through the open window and putting it in park once it was outside. As the Dart started to clear the garage, it started to roll on its own. With skates still on, my brother reached in and flipped the park lever downward to stop the car. All that happened was a clickety-click sound as the car started to pick up speed. My brother skated through the garage and into the house yelling, "The car is rolling down the driveway!" Mom ran out just in time to see the Dart careen across the street, only to be suddenly stopped by a phone pole. This was strike three for the Dart. The insurance company now received its third call. The car had a scratched paint job, two pushed-in doors, and a smashed-up rear bumper. I don't remember how that worked out, but I do remember that the Dart was traded in for a new 1967 Chevy Chevelle. 6 years later, the Chevelle had a mishap on an icy road that had it ending up in a neighbor's front yard. But that's another story. And this was The Misadventures of Our Dodge Dart by Mark Steffen. This next story is entitled Farmyard Fun. Invented games were more fun than any store-bought toys. This story was sent in by Susan Davis. I loved growing up on a small farm in northeastern Colorado in the 1950s and 60s. I had 9 siblings, and our parents didn't buy us many toys. That only enhanced our imaginations to come up with unique, fun games to play. We had a large graveled farmyard. One of the games we invented was our version of log rolling. There was a small hill at the east side of our yard. We rolled an empty 55-gallon drum to the top of the hill. The first barrel walker was assisted up onto it, and then someone gave the drum a push. As the rusty drum rolled down the hill and over the gravel, it naturally gained speed. So did the feet that were trying to stay aboard the metal container. It took plenty of balance and practice to master this pastime of ours. Falling off was inevitable. In the process, we received a few bruises, skin knees, and elbows. Like typical kids, we would roll the barrel back up the hill and try again. Our goal was to increase the distance we could barrel walk. Another fun game we came up with was simply called fishing. Every spring, Mom bought us an assortment of colored straw hats to wear while we thinned out the extra beets and hoed weeds in our sugar beet fields. I always chose a red hat because red was my favorite color. The straw hats had strings that wrapped around the front half of the brim and tied under the chin. Those strings came in handy when it was windy. They also served a useful purpose for our fishing game. When we had worked our way to the end of the field, we took off our hats and laid them on the ground upside down. The different colors of hats were worth a variety of points. We took turns closing our eyes and using the end of our hoe to hook a string and lift up a hat. If you were successful, you had, quote, caught a fish, end quote. The one who got the most points won. When we weren't working out in the field, we spent quite a bit of our time in our barn. We didn't mind its smell, but we were scared of the barn spiders that had taken up residence there. They made their homes on the undersides of the wooden beams that supported the hayloft. They looked huge to us. They had big round bodies that were a unique salmon color with gray spots. Their bodies also had a few strands of hair. These ugly spiders inspired my siblings and me to invent a game called Spider. Someone was picked to be the spider. She or he would chase the other players around the barn, trying to pinch them. If you were pinched, you then became the spider. Two ladders led up to the hayloft. Players scrambled up and down the ladders or hung on to the rungs, waiting to see what their next move should be. We could also flee to the granary to escape the spider's pursuit. We giggled as we acrobatically maneuvered from the floor to the hayloft and vice versa. Meanwhile, you had to pay close attention to know who the current spider was. We made all kinds of commotion in the barn while we played the game. The real spider simply hung around under those rafters. On our farm, there was also a shack. My dad had grown up on that farm with 12 siblings. Since there wasn't enough room for all of them to sleep in their small house, the four older boys slept in the shack. The building was furnished with some of Grandpa and Grandma's old furniture. The shack also had some old school desks in it. Dad bought them when our country school closed. The desks helped make it a perfect place for my siblings and me to play school. We shut the shack's two-bedroom doors. Our classroom was in the combination living room-kitchen. It felt like a one-room schoolhouse. I loved being the teacher and giving my siblings assignments. It was fun to grade their papers. If someone had to go to the restroom, they had to raise their hand and ask permission. We used the old outhouse just west of our shack. School was dismissed when we got tired of playing it. Then we'd find something else to keep us entertained. Our family also came up with a unique way to play softball. When cousins visited at our farm, we had enough players to make up two teams. Our pasture was a great place to play. We used old boards for bases. If the cattle were grazing in the vicinity where we wanted to play, they soon moved on and grazed elsewhere. They probably didn't like all the commotion we made. We had to avoid obstacles, including cactuses and piles of manure. We also had to avoid overthrowing home plate. If the ball went sailing over the barbed wire fence, the catcher had to crawl under the fence or straddle it to retrieve the ball. Since my siblings and I didn't get many store-bought toys, we created unique, fun games to entertain ourselves. You can't put a price tag on that. And this was Farmyard Fun by Susan Davis. Now here's a story entitled A Runaway Kite. The old box kite needed a strong wind, which brought more adventure than imagined. This was written and sent in by Dave D'Agostino. We lived in East Flatbush, New York, in 1959, when I was 10 years old. My dad was a general contractor, and sometimes he brought home interesting finds he encountered in some of the demolition jobs before new construction. Case in point was an enormous box kite that had a broken main strut. At that time, I was really into flying kites with my buddies, but I had never had a box kite before. My professional expertise consisted of many 50-cent paper kites from the neighborhood candy store. This box kite was almost as tall as me, probably close to 4 feet long and 2 feet in diameter. Dad found it in the debris of Floyd Bennett Airfield, and it must have been some type of weather test or recording device that was headed for the trash bin. A quick trip to the garage, and I found a steel bracket that I used to splint the broken rib. I just couldn't wait for the next windy day. I thought to myself, no prob, I've got this. I'll just run fast. Now, until I attempted to fly it, I didn't realize that a box kite that weighed probably 4 to 7 pounds would need more than a gentle breeze to get it aloft. After my first failure, I noticed that it had attachment points for the line or string, and one was labeled 12 to 18 miles per hour, and the second was labeled 18 to 30 miles per hour. So I waited until a storm was brewing with winds gusting to 30 miles per hour. Prior to this date, I had already experienced string burn with other kites when, as you release the line for the kite, it slips through your fingers so fast that it actually burns your skin. Well, I was not going to let that happen today. So I took my dad's fishing rod with the 25-pound test line on it and a star drag reel that I hoped would allow me to ease out the line. So there I was in the street with almost hurricane conditions after sneaking out so my mom wouldn't stop me. I let go of the kite and the wind snatched it away in a millisecond. I raised the fishing rod and released the drag. The wind scooped up the kite in a flash. I thought, wow, this baby is really sailing, and the rod is working great. And it was, until, that is, the kite stripped all the line off the reel, and the rod was yanked from my hands, flying down the street at breakneck speed. I took off after the whole mess, chasing the rod and reel and the kite through the streets and through neighbors' front yards. Fortunately, there was no traffic, as anyone with any common sense was inside due to the approaching storm. After a 3 or 4 block chase, the rod snagged on a fence. The sudden stop broke the string, fortunately for me, leaving the rod and reel behind. I never did see that kite again. The next day found me in the hardware store, buying a new spool of line to replace the one that had been stripped off Dad's reel and was now somewhere out there with the kite. I was thinking, Dad is going to know and he'll tell Mom and then I'll be in trouble. The next time we went out fishing, Dad asked me about the new line, and I told him I was restringing mine, so I did his too. He never did ask about the kite, which I was thankful for. I was also thankful that no one else ever found out about my box kite experience, that is, until now. I'm hoping my kid sister will be reading this story in good old days. And this was A Runaway Kite by Dave D'Agostino. This next story is entitled An Unforgettable Speech. A prank by his sons created quite a bang with the audience. This story was written and sent in by Doug Doherty. Highlights and Boys Life magazines and Superman comics were popular reading materials for young boys in the 1960s. In the pages of these publications, one could find engaging puzzles, instructions on tying knots and starting campfires, and a virtuous hero with superpowers whose only weakness was an imaginary green element, kryptonite. But besides their more prosaic uses, if, say, a young boy carefully read the small print in the back of the magazines and comics, he would find ads for all sorts of oddities, including seahorses, Charles Atlas strongman training, small items he could sell and be rewarded with a BB gun, and of all things, explosive loads for cigarettes and cigars. That last one was just too much of a temptation for my brother Steve and me. My dad smoked cigars. He could almost always be found when working with a smoking brown Tampa Nugget cigar clamped in his teeth. The smoke would curl around his face and drift into the atmosphere. He was a successful businessman with a family business that sold fuel oil to thousands of homes and businesses in the Chattanooga area. He did well, becoming a national leader in that sector. Once he was invited to give a speech at the National Oil Man's Convention in Philadelphia at a large convention hall. His oration was well thought out, typed, and rehearsed. It was a signal event in his career. He bought a new suit, tie, and a gray felt trilby hat and had shined his black leather wingtips. By all accounts, he was well prepared. What he didn't know was that his two youngest sons had also prepared. We had ordered explosive loads from a comic book. And oh yes, we put them in my dad's cigars before he boarded the plane in Chattanooga, Tennessee. These little loads looked like small white spikes. We had a small tin of them. When Dad, dignified and honored, took to the stage after he was introduced, he told a joke or two and prepared to report important data and trends in the business realm to several thousand people. In those days, it was unremarkable for a man to publicly smoke in such circumstances. My father lit his stogie, cleared his throat, and began. "Fellow oil men of the United States," he said, "I come to you with good news about the future of our industry." He lifted his right arm and took a pull from the cigar. The tip lit bright red. Kapow! Cinders, gray ash, and little brown tobacco leaves went everywhere. Startled, I can only imagine, my dad stood there, cigar in shreds, like a horizontal mushroom. At first he was perplexed, but then he did something quite extraordinary. He laughed, as did the entire crowd. It was the high point of the convention, the one thing everyone told their friends and families back home. I can only speculate that it was the only reason we were never punished. In fact, the incident was never brought up in my presence. When I think of my dad, or even my grandfather, one thing I think of is cigars. They both enjoyed them. When I recall this single prank, I reflect on Dad's sense of humor and humanity. He certainly appreciated the honors, but somewhere there was an even deeper appreciation of the strange humor of his little boys. This was An Unforgettable Speech by Doug Doherty. Now here's an item from the Bits and Pieces section of the Good Old Days. This one is entitled Family Outings, and it was sent in by Margaret Brinton. I spent my elementary years in the northern latitudes of Minnesota. I entered first grade in 1955. For young children in that time and place, there was ease and simplicity. Lakes and forests and fields covered the region of my early childhood. I recall outings when my father took our family for late afternoon drives on the blacktop roads. He would drive slowly along as we watched for the beautiful fowl of that area. The birds of field and forest would sometimes scurry out from their nesting places. We were especially on the lookout for quail and pheasant and partridge. My younger brother and I learned to identify those birds by their lovely plumage and colorings. For those family outings, my mother would pack a paper bag with fresh apples and candy bars. At some point along our way, my father would turn onto a gravel road that led into the woods. There he would pull over and stop, and my mother would pass around the bag filled with treats for us. Those times together in the family car out in the countryside will still give me, decades later, a very warm memory. And that's our show for today. You've been listening to Reminiscing on Sun Sounds of Arizona, Arizona's 24-hour reading station. This is your volunteer reader, Dr. Mary Ellen Stepanek, wishing you good afternoon and good memories.